Quantum Crypto Power. DEFCON's uncancelled. Again. NetApp and Spectralogic have the tapes. Avanti's under assault. Zscaler COO is OOO. And we're going to take a closer look at all the big announcements from Cisco Live EMEA in this episode of the Gestalt IT Rundown. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Gestalt IT Rundown for February 7th, 2024. As you can see, I am on site here at Cisco Live EMEA. We just finished up a great recording of all of our Tech Field Day sessions, and I am joined by one of our delegates and my co-host, Zoe Rose. Zoe, welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm excited.
We're very excited to have you here, but I have an important question. It's National Periodic Table Day, so what is your favorite element?
That's a hard one. I like all of them, actually. I in school, I got very excited when we had to memorize the table because that was one thing I enjoyed.
Well, I'm glad you are, because fluorine and I are no longer on speaking terms. Just don't ask, it was a thing. We're going to go ahead and jump into the news stories for today because we've got some great stuff that we want to catch you up on.
Quantum computing is a topic that is still on the horizon, but the prospect of post-quantum cryptography has been very active in recent months. This week, the Linux Foundation announced the formation of the Post-Quantum Cryptography Association, a group dedicated to the idea that cryptographic algorithms need to be hardened before quantum computing renders them invalid. So founding members of the group include IBM, AWS, Google, and QSecure.
Well, I think this is really interesting, Zoe, because we've talked a lot on the rundown over the last few months about how important it is that there are standards around post-quantum cryptography. And really quickly, the two-minute overview is, well, 20-second overview, quantum computers can absolutely invalidate modern RSA encryption algorithms because they can factor prime numbers instantaneously. If you want proof of that, go watch Sneakers. That is what that movie is based on. But what we are trying to do now is we're trying to create more robust algorithms, and NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology in the United States, has selected algorithms that are capable of being quantum resistant. Note, not quantum proof, because that's not a thing anymore. But this is an industry organization that's being created by a lot of companies that are very heavily invested into quantum computing, such as IBM, that are trying to create standards or create guidance around those. Because one of the things that we noticed when NIST was doing this algorithm selection process is that a lot of people were throwing things at the wall without regard for how it would be received. And thankfully, we found some pretty devastating holes in a lot of the candidates that were selected out early. But by having industry guidance and helping people understand both where the state of quantum computing is now, but also where we need to go with the encryption algorithms, it's going to help people quite a bit. And you probably noticed some big names in there like IBM, AWS, Google. QSecure is a company that was started very recently that has been doing a lot of work in this space. And I have some friends that have worked over there, and they're doing some exciting stuff that you definitely want to check out on their website, which we'll link to in the show notes. But, you know, it's interesting that a lot of startups are starting to jump in this space. Quantum computing may not be as exciting or as hot as AI right now, but once we hit a certain tipping point, I think you're going to see a lot of quantum cryptography discussions. And it's one of the places in security that I think is one of the most exciting fields right now. All right, Zoe, I don't know if you know this or not, but DEF CON was canceled again. But this time it was only for one day. Caesars Entertainment, which is the company that controls the hotel where DEF CON has been held for the last 25 years, announced that they won't be renewing their contract. The DEF CON organizers jumped on a plane and went out to Las Vegas and started scouting the area and found a new place to host the convention. It's going to be at the Las Vegas Convention Center, which is a little further up the strip. No word was given from Caesars about the reason behind the cancellation, but I don't know if you remember this or not, they got hacked seriously in 2023, and there are people who are rumored to say, well, maybe the threat actors that got into Caesars kind of poisoned the investors and said, maybe this wasn't such a good idea. Zoe, I mean, what are your thoughts on DEF CON?
I think it's absolutely hilarious that their approach is, well, we were hacked, so we're gonna block out all of the security experts that are coming to celebrate and probably upset a couple of them because their bookings and their hotel reservations were made quite a long time ago. That's my opinion. However, I have seen everybody has been very jolly on Twitter or X, because it's a running joke if you don't know. DEF CON is cancelled, da da da. Now they're going, DEF CON is uncancelled. So nice swag, I'm sure, coming soon. Next one is NetApp and Spectra Logic are ready to bring Glacier-style storage to on-prem data centers. The announcement matches NetApp Storage Grid S3-based object storage with Spectra Logic leading archival tape technology. The goal is to provide tier for storage grid that will allow large amounts of data to be stored for long periods of time without clogging up the object data storage while also being faster than Amazon Glacier, the cloud storage solution that does a very similar thing.
Yeah, this I think is an interesting way to kind of take a look at what object storage is doing, because I remember, a couple of years, 3, 4, 5 years ago, object storage is the solution to all of your problems because it's easier to store things there. You don't have to worry about running out of nodes and stuff like that. The problem, of course, is that you will eventually run out of everything because no matter how big your object store is, your filing system is going to overwhelm it. And when you think about even the most robust SSD in the world has limitations. And some data just does not need to be nearline. Like it does not need to be right there in the hot tier. And we've seen this over the years with a number of solutions. But what goes past that, kind of close fetch thing? Well, historically it's been tape. But for a long time, the way that we've treated tape is it is completely archival. We write to the tape, we store the tape in a salt mine, and we hope we don't ever need it back. But Amazon Glacier has become a very key part of their data retention strategy. And the idea is that you write the data into Glacier. It is dirt cheap to get it in there. And the problem is when you need to get it back. You hope that you never do. And it's not a backup. It's not like a set that's in a container that is unsearchable. This solution from NetApp, Storage Grid, and from Spectra Logic is, think of it almost like a cold storage. I can still access that data. I know it exists. It's just not readily available. And that is key because a lot of people love the idea of Glacier and really wish that they could get it maybe on-prem, which that's kind of what they're shooting for here. Plus, it's all S3 based. So if you have a solution that can write to an S3 target, you don't have anything to worry about. Storage Grid will take care of all the translations in the background. You just have to mark the Spectra Logic tape archive as kind of one of those storage tiers, and Storage Grid takes care of the rest. I think that this is going to be something that companies that are trying to embrace hybrid cloud are really going to pick up on simply because they have infrastructure in place to handle this archival storage media. They really want to be able to continue to use it and offload some of the high costs of continually adding lots of data storage to their tiers and basically filling it up with data that never really changes. I'm interested to see kind of how this works. And if you'll recall a couple of weeks ago on the rundown, Stephen covered a similar story about tape and said, man, we need to get Spectra Logic in here. Well, there you go. They were just waiting for the next time to make a good big announcement. All right, Zoe, I don't know if you remember this or not, but a couple of weeks ago on the rundown, we mentioned that Ivanti was having some issues with their CVE disclosure process. And well, the chickens have finally come home to roost because Ivanti is currently seeing there's a server-side request forgery vulnerability that's being actively exploited as we speak. This particularly nasty bug allows for mitigation efforts to be bypassed, and admin teams can lose control of their network gateways thanks to some clever exploit chaining. Ivanti released a patch for this back on February the 1st, but we do not have any data about how many affected systems have been patched to date. Zoe, is this kind of vulnerability exploitation process something that companies need to be worried about if they're using Ivanti?
I think a lot of companies would want to take the approach that Ivanti took, is trying to minimize the appearance of issues. But they've also kind of shot themselves in the foot, because when you reduce the amount of information and say, oh, it's just one thing, but it's actually multiple things, it makes it not clear to the system owners what's actually the problem. What am I affected by? What are the issues? What are the risks in my environment? Oh, I'm not affected by this one, but maybe I am affected by this, but I didn't realize those were two different things in the same thing. So yeah, it's a pretty nasty situation, and ultimately it's kind of been caused by them wanting to pretend they're not as vulnerable as they are. I think hopefully this will enable or encourage organizations to be a bit more clear in, yes, we have these vulnerabilities, these are all of the clearly explained issues and separated as needed, and hopefully allows them to be a bit more good at the remediation process. Here's hoping. All right. Zscaler COO Dali Rajic has decided to head over to competitor Wiz. This announcement came from an SEC filing from Zscaler, noting that he was leaving effective the 2nd of February. This move is expected to see Rajic in the same position in the startup as they look to the IPO in the near future. Rajic has a long history with successful companies like AppDynamics and BMC Software, and is known as someone very focused on rapid growth.
This is something that he is really well known for, is, you know, growth. And that's something that Zscaler has been experiencing quite a bit over the last year or two, thanks to this shift towards SSE, Secure Services Edge, which is essentially SASE without the access layer. Now, there have been reports that Zscaler is looking at introducing a hardware appliance to allow them to have a presence in these networks. But I think what you're going to see over time is that the market for SSE is going to be very competitive. And once you hit a certain point in a company, growth kind of shifts a little bit. We're not focused on blasting it out as fast as possible. You have to spend a little bit more time cultivating your customers. You have to spend a little bit more time kind of being more answerable to what they want. Whereas in a newer startup, maybe one who's a little bit more hungry and competitive, you can kind of shift back into that mindset of let's do whatever it takes to gain the market share. And I think that we could be seeing that here with the departure of Dali, because essentially what he's saying is, I've taken Zscaler about as far as I'm going to be able to take it right now. And that's not always a bad thing. You see this a lot in startups where you have a very aggressive, technically focused CEO who then needs to step aside to focus more on the technical aspects of the product and let someone with a bit more business-focused mindset kind of take the reins of the company. Now, the idea that they're kind of steaming towards this IPO eventually is not all that uncommon. A lot of tech companies want that as their kind of exit strategy. I think ultimately what this means is that he's trying to buy in to the company in enough time to be able to get a good return on his investment with the IPO. So here's hoping that he is able to take Wiz to where it needs to be, but also here's hoping that Zscaler is able to backfill that position and continue to be a very trusted name in the space and hopefully, you know, make the most of it. All right, Zoe, as I alluded to at the top of the show, we are here at Cisco Live EMEA, and we're learning about a lot of great things that Cisco has been interested in showing us. They've been investing in great technology. They've been trying to bring it to the market. And I thought it would be interesting if maybe we took kind of a quick look at some of the announcements that we're providing. And maybe as an expert in a lot of things IT, you can give us some context around why they're important. One of the things that I noticed that was a really big announcement was this idea behind identity intelligence, because Cisco has decided to enhance their security cloud to offer protection against identity-based attacks. The product is called Identity Intelligence, and it is an industry-first blending of identity, networking, and security that helps protect complex identity frameworks that have become increasingly popular targets for attackers. Cisco cites data from their Talos group that some 26% of the engagements that Talos got involved in last year involved attackers who were using compromised valid credentials to get inside of systems that then had no protection against those valid logins that allowed for lateral movement. Identity intelligence allows security teams to find those accounts, clean up their permissions, and potentially secure them from anomalous behavior. Zoe, you're a security expert. How often are we starting to see that compromised accounts with terrible permissions are letting attackers just kind of walk in through the front door?
Oh, this is 100% a problem. I mean, think of the traditional set of an organization. They want to protect the outside, but the inside people need to get things done, so we just let them get it done, or we don't document what they're doing, so we don't actually know what we're allowed to lock down. And then having that historic setup and then changing it over time is really bloody hard. So of course this is an issue. To fix it, you have to go to the things like zero trust, but the problem is that's a really fancy word, but not well understood, and very difficult to implement in a large organization. So taking this approach is, I think, really interesting, because it's taking the concept of zero trust, the concept of, well, what do you actually need? And I'll give you access to that, but nothing else. But doing it in a way that isn't just using a marketing term, it's defining it so it's clearer to all parties that one, have to implement it, and two, have to pay the bill to do it. And so they maybe understand it a bit better.
And I think one of the other things that's kind of underscored in the announcement too is they talk a lot about valid credentials that are being exploited. The assumption might be, oh, well, someone guessed my password. But as we saw with the Lapsus Group all through 2022 and 2023, it's insider threats that can be just as devastating, because Lapsus will send these people $400 or $500 and gain access to an account that they can then use to do all kinds of crazy things, like, I don't know, lock you out of your Slack channels. And so by using heuristic behavior detection, they can see, oh, well, you know, Bob's account is doing things that it's not supposed to do. So we're going to suspend it for the time being until we can get a hold of Bob and say, are you doing these things? Is somebody else doing this? Has anybody gotten a hold of your password? And it would allow incident response teams to have a much quicker response and reduced dwell time for insider threats. Because as we've seen over the years, all it takes is one disgruntled employee who, you know, takes the right bribe, sells out a little bit, and they're off to the races. And if your controls internally, like you said, without zero trust are not very good, Lord only knows what's going to happen. All right. We talked about security, but there's something else that we need to talk about. If you had your bets that Cisco was going to make an AI announcement, better go ahead and collect your winnings, because Cisco announced Motific, which is part of their Outshift platform. It's a SaaS-based solution that's aimed at rapid deployment of Gen AI applications. But what makes this different than some of the other Gen AI stuff that we've been talking about is the fact that Cisco is very focused about security, especially around doing things like protecting proprietary company data, creating audit trails to figure that out. That's actually something that we saw a little bit about at the end of our field day sessions, was this idea that if you're going to paste code into a GPT prompt, we can interrupt that process and go, wait just a minute, you're not supposed to be sharing this with the outside world. I mean, as someone who deals with security, but also sees what's going on with AI, how important is it to kind of put some guardrails around that?
Well, I think there's two things that are important. Is one, people, even technical people, but especially non-technical people, don't really understand the impact of using these tools. So they don't realize this tool is learning by collecting data. That data then can be shared without the without realizing it's going to be shared, which we've seen in the past. There's been tools where people have uploaded and other people have downloaded what they uploaded, and not even talking about AI, and they had a data breach because they gave the data willingly without realizing what the impact was. AI is just as bad, if not worse, because you can use it to create this lovely content, you can use it to simplify processes, but if you don't realize that it's maybe done in a way that's not so privacy focused, you do run into the challenge of giving data away, as well as, well, what's the impact of using the tool? Because how do you do the copyright on that?
I think it's valuable that Cisco is looking at this as from a security focused perspective to begin with, because that's one of the things that kind of bugs me about this move fast, break things idea that we see in a lot of Silicon Valley startups is, oh, what's the worst thing that could happen? Well, if you're dealing with a platform that is essentially an amalgamation of all the intelligence and data out there, and you can't verify that it actually does forget things that you've told it, I don't know what's going to happen in the future, because one of the things that AI and machine learning are really good at is sifting through mountains of data to uncover patterns, to look for very specific pieces of things. And what we end up creating effectively is, and I hate the cliche, but it's true, a ticking time bomb of what happens if someone figures out a way to engineer a prompt to get that information without you realizing that you put it in there. So by creating these guardrails from the beginning, don't paste code in there. Don't share this copyrighted material or this intellectual property that's specific to us, but also by helping sort that mess out, because sometimes shadow IT isn't about people trying to go around your IT organizations. It's about them trying to build something on, you know, the sly for their side gig that then they can turn into a business later on. And I don't mean to impart nefarious motivations to people, but let's be fair, they do exist. So I like that Cisco's not just jumping in and slapping an AI sticker on the side of the box and going, hey, you're never going to believe how much AI this baby has. They're doing it, you know, in a way that really kind of makes sense.
I also really like the way that Cisco approaches it, where it's not just the guardrails, it's not just making sure that they're worried about privacy, it's also, can this actually achieve what I'm wanting it to do? They're not saying, well, it can do everything, you know, like cars, when they have autonomous cars, Tesla likes to say, oh, you can drive it fully autonomously, whereas other vendors are like, well, you still have to have your hands on the wheel, you still have to pay attention, please don't kill anyone. With Cisco, it's, we have it, and we've tested it thoroughly, so we know that when you ask it for this prompt, it's not going to take your network down because it didn't know the answer, so it made it up.
Yeah. One of the other big AI announcements that came out was this new partnership between Cisco and NVIDIA for on-prem AI computing. Now, NVIDIA is probably the biggest name in AI, and they have a big business that's built around it, but now you're going to be able to get a Cisco UCS server with NVIDIA Tensor Core GPUs that will be developing AI workloads. Cisco's also working on their Cisco validated designs to deploy and manage those AI clusters at scale, as well as offering support and management through the Nexus Management Dashboard, as well as Cisco Intersight. And lastly, Cisco is providing monitoring and observability for workloads, whether or not they're living in an AI cloud or on-prem AI. And I think this is something that a lot of people have been overlooking is, you know, historically, if you wanted to do on-prem AI, effectively you had to buy everything for NVIDIA. But if my shop sells or buys Cisco UCS, I'm kind of in a lurch. So do you think that this is going to be something that's valuable to people to be able to say, I want that Cisco server with this NVIDIA stuff, but I want to manage it with my Cisco items?
I think so. I mean, any way that you can make it easier to adopt a solution or easier to use it in an environment that doesn't specifically match the exact replica of what they designed, you know, it gives it a bit more flexibility, it's going to be easier to pick it up, because I don't know any organization that's going to be like, okay, well, this new technology is out, we're going to rebuy everything and recreate our entire environment. That's not going to happen. So any flexibility you can have is going to be beneficial, but it does depend on what organization you're going with, because even for some, this will still be unachievable.
Yeah, and the other thing too that I think is interesting, if you kind of read between the lines, is a partnership between Cisco and NVIDIA assumes that most of the connectivity that's going to be coming to these clusters is going to be Ethernet-based. And for those of you out there in the know, you realize that historically, NVIDIA's solutions have heavily leveraged InfiniBand, because that is kind of their HPC solution to this. They are embracing some of the more IP-focused technologies through Spectrum X, which is their new Ethernet AI offering, especially for cloud providers. And the cloud providers have been driving this, but maybe not so much for on-prem. However, since Cisco has such a long history of doing this, and they have solutions that are focused on Ethernet for AI, such as their Silicon One platform, I believe it's the G200 chip that's doing it, I think that you're going to start to see this shift. And I've been talking about it for a while. The idea that InfiniBand is effectively going to go into maintenance mode. Like, if you want the full kit from NVIDIA drop shipped to your building, it's still going to have InfiniBand in it. But as you start embracing more of these cloud AI platforms, software as a service, things like Motific and other ideas, you're going to have to really embrace this AI Ethernet, you know, which is Ultra Ethernet, for lack of a better term. But by NVIDIA embracing it as well, they're effectively saying, we are going to play nice with that ecosystem and not just lock everybody out, because, you know, why not? It's, you know, we've been the king of the InfiniBand hill for a while. So I'm curious to see what the uptick on this is. Obviously, if nobody buys a UCS server with Tensor Core GPUs, then it's not going to matter, because Cisco will stop offering it and NVIDIA will just go their own way. But I think that there's enough people out there that have bought Cisco equipment over the years and manage it with Cisco devices and Cisco dashboards that they will sell enough of it to make it a relevant product line. And I mean, when you look at all the other things that Cisco goes into, like FlexPod, and that is being used for these kinds of applications, I think ultimately you're going to see enough work being done on it that it will shift the needle when it comes to, you know, the way that we look at AI consumption. All right, well, We do have a couple of events that are coming up in the next couple of weeks that we wanted to let you know about. The first one, of course, is AI Field Day 4. That's going to be taking place February 21st through the 23rd. So that's in about 2 weeks. It's going to be in Silicon Valley. Stephen Foskett's going to be out there talking to some great companies like Intel, Solidigm, VMware, and Hammerspace. If you want to learn more about that, go to techfieldday.com and click on the link for AI Field Day. The next week, I'm going to be in Silicon Valley, and I'm going to be celebrating our Leap Day with Networking Field Day. 28th and 29th of February is going to see us having presentations from companies like Nile Secure, Forward Networks, Aviz Networks, and more. You can always see the most up-to-date list of presenters and delegates on our website, techfieldday.com. Just click on the link that you want to check out. Zoe, what are some things that people should check out if they want to follow the things that you're doing?
The first would be my podcast I co-host. They definitely should check that out, especially if you felt overwhelmed in the chat we just had, the Imposter Syndrome Network podcast. It's a little bit of a mouthful, and it talks about different careers you can have in tech and dealing with the sense of not being good enough. We've interviewed many brilliant people that have all had that challenge. Next, you can look at my website. Sometimes I have a chat on there, sometimes not. I plan to be a bit more active coming later, maybe Q2 of this year when I finally am off maternity, however.
Well, thank you very much for that. And thank you for joining me this week as a co-host on The Rundown. And you can check out a new episode of The Rundown every Wednesday around 12:30 Eastern time on our website at gestaltit.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel and click the notification icon so that you'll be alerted as soon as we upload a new episode. That's youtube.com/gestaltitvideo. You can also subscribe as a podcast if you are one of the more auditory explorers in our community. So just look for Gestalt IT Rundown in your favorite podcast application of choice, wherever you get those. We'll be back next week with another great episode. And we'll probably be back in the studio, so you'll get to see me in my formless void as opposed to the bright background behind me. But I hope that all of our bright people out there who are a part of our wonderful Gestalt IT community tune in for this episode and all the ones in the future. Until then, take care of yourselves and have a wonderful day.